ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. The second and third segment today, I am pleased to have a conversation with James Corbett that was previously recorded, and that will follow the first segment, of course, because I've already said it was the second and third segment. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it's Friday, and I'm so very thankful that it is. TGIF, everyone. So it was a great conversation with James Corbett. I do enjoy those when we have them every other week. He brings so much information. I do encourage you to get and visit his website, thecorbettreport.com. And, of course, that also he's the head writer for the International Forecaster, and we all know our dear friend Bob Chapman was the creator of the International Forecaster. So there is that association. And, of course, you can always get that free complimentary issue from the International Forecaster still. Just go to the website and request that, theinternationalforecaster.com. So let's go ahead and get to the market report. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, it is Friday, as I said before, January 11th, 2019. So gold is still struggling, but it's, you know, that 1300 mark is a strong resistant barrier, and we're certainly seeing it looks more like 1290 is it looks like it needs to break 1290 and stay above that in order to break that 1300. So maybe the 1290 is the bigger resistant level. 1288.60 today, up 160. Silver was up 3 pennies today at $15.66. Platinum was down 9 at 814, along with palladium down 9 at 1327. The USDX today was stronger by 0.14 at 95.68. Crude oil was down 92 at 51.67. The paper markets today, the Dow was down 6. It was down triple digits earlier in the day. It came back. You know, it just kind of, I think everybody's waiting. There's no reaction to anything that's going on as far as the government shutdown and so forth. Not yet, anyway. 23,995. The NASDAQ was down 14 at 6,971, with the S&P basically unchanged at 2596. 10-year yield, 2.70%, down 0.03. Euro, 115. European Asian markets, so it's been fairly quiet everywhere. The fear and the greed index, the number on that is 30. And you know, Bitcoin barely moved overnight, so you know, it's everybody's just waiting. There's no reaction, and it's just, I think this is the world we live in anymore. You have all these actions, everything is going on, it's crazy, not just here but around the world, but there's no reactions to everything. Everybody just it's the new world we live in. This is, you know, it is what it is. So maybe there are too many people out there, you know, smoking that pot, and maybe there's enough people on Prozac and everything else that it just doesn't seem to matter anymore. It's a beautiful day in the world, and I don't know. It's crazy. It's crazy. But there's one report out today. Government shutdown hasn't completely stopped the flow of bad housing data. Sales of newly built homes fell 18% in December compared with December of 2017. And of course, this was data compiled by John Burns Real Estate Consulting, which is a research and analytics firm. Due to the partial government shutdown, the government figures on home sales for November and December have not been released. Looks like the sales were also down a steep 19% annually in November. This firm counts 373 market ratings by local builders overseeing more than 3,500 new home communities, estimated to be 16% of U.S. new home sales. And their figures in the past do correlate pretty close with the government readings. So new home sales took a hit. Mortgage rates rose sharply at the start of last fall, and of course that did put a little more stress on the market, where prices had been overheating for the past couple of years. So again, it's just another sign that makes, you know, when you don't have this, when these numbers fall, your appliances, your people aren't there buying, supplying these new furniture. Sales would be lower, and so it relates to an idea of where we are as an economy. I saw this headline and I thought, are you kidding me? Maybe we really are living in this world. Maybe everybody is, maybe that's really not chemtrails up there that they're spraying. Maybe that's not chemicals and so forth. Maybe it's just some sort of, relaxer, so everyone's happy, everybody smile, don't worry, be happy. Ocasio-Cortez, we all know her. Reportedly, she's in line for a banking post. Yeah, I saw that. It's like, are you kidding me? It's just like this world just becomes more and more bizarre. And of course, big banks wouldn't like her. Wall Street wouldn't like her. But we all know that she identifies as a democratic socialist. But she is in line to be appointed to the House Financial Services Committee. And this was according to a Politico report. With prominent Democrats looking to unwind the 2 years of deregulation, the seat would put her in a position to exert substantial influence. And then now again, her appointment also will give new committee chairwoman Maxine Waters. Can you imagine these two pairing up? An important ally. And it's just. And of course, Waters had said she's after Wall Street, that the days of deregulation were over. She says, make no mistake, come January, in this committee, the days of this committee weakening regulations and putting our economy once again at risk of another financial crisis is going to come to an end. So we'll have to see about that. But yeah, I saw that headline. It's like, are you kidding me? Her? So, ladies and gentlemen, what better reason do you have than to buy gold and silver after that report? Come on. Oh, it gets scarier and scarier. There's some interesting information coming out about the shutdown. And, of course, we deal with finances here. And if the shutdown lasts 2 more weeks, the cost of the economy is going to exceed the price of the wall. According to an estimate by S&P Global Ratings, it will only take another 2 weeks to cost the economy more than $6 billion, exceeding the $5.7 billion that President Trump has demanded to fund his proposed border wall, and the U.S. economy will have lost $3.6 billion by Friday. We estimated that this shutdown could shave approximately $1.2 billion off of real GDP in the quarter for each week that part of the government is closed. Now, the S&P's chief U.S. economist, Beth Ann Bovino, said that might seem pennies for the world's biggest economy, but it means a lot to those workers trying to cover their household costs without their paychecks. And this report has it broken down into consumer spending. You're going to be have retailers that might start to feel the pinch from 800,000 people not spending. Because they're not getting paychecks, it'll eventually, and there is a multiplier effect, of course. It was always said that if you had to lay off, if you laid off 10 people, it's really like laying off 30 people. It's a multiplier of three. So this would certainly be the case. And certainly the stores that are barely breathing, as Dick's Sporting Goods and Bed Bath & Beyond and Best Buy, of course, they would all feel that any pinch would hurt them much more so than, I doubt you're going to see any Amazon, big differences other than his divorce. But other than that, that's another story. So, of course, you're going to have Wall Street is beginning to cut the GDP forecast because of the shutdown. And personally, what I believe this shutdown, I think the shutdown will have to be in place longer than any other shutdown. And then I do believe that they will find the funds in order to build the wall, whether it be by a state of emergency, whether it be, stealing from Paul to rob Peter to pay Paul. Something was going to happen, and then they'll reinstate the government. And they're not going to let the government down to where it begins to impact Wall Street And they're just not going to do that, not when it's by choice. So, and hey, maybe, the Wall Street, maybe, it's already on the brink of disaster. So, maybe they started something that they won't be able to stop. If the Wall Street begins to unravel and the economy begins to unravel, maybe it's something they can't stop, whether they, start the government up or not. I mean, this is something that we'll have to wait and see. There was a report out today by, it was ABC News. They were quoting the doomsday scenario if the shutdown continues on. It's never been shut down for more than 21 days, a record that will fall if the current closure lasts until Saturday. Mark Zandi, you heard us mention his name periodically on this program. He's chief economist at Moody's Analytics. He says, we'll be in no man's land. If the worst were to happen, experts say the devastating impact could be widespread. We have 38 million low-income Americans lose food stamps. 6 million face an uncertain timetable for collecting tax refunds. And I'll tell you what, if this country solely runs and needs 6 million people to spend their tax refunds, doesn't that just tell you what's wrong, that there's something wrong? 2 million without rental assistance, 800,000, of course, paychecks, shuttered in parks and museums, federal court system slows to a crawl. Well, that's already at a crawl. I don't know how much slower they can go. Disaster relief money doesn't get to storm-ravaged areas. The only one that kind of truly concerns me, yes, the economy and so forth, but they mentioned something that I didn't think about, and it talks about the Food and Drug Administration. They have already stopped most food inspections. So, the question is, does that really put our food supply at risk? I don't know how much they inspect as it is now, but, I mean, we have certainly seen some pretty major warnings in the past, whether it's from lettuce and so forth, they had to take off the shelf and so forth. The Environmental Protection Agency, where only 700 of 13,000 workers are working during the shutdown, they have scaled back. So if there is a bad storm or something like that, but this time of the year, unless it's a major snowstorm or ice storm, we don't have to worry about hurricanes. But I did think about the FDA, and I thought that might be something to think about. So the federal court system will run out of money by January 18th. They'll have to cut back operations. So again, I think we're going to meet the deadline. We're going to go a couple of days to make sure that this shutdown is the biggest ever. And then they'll go about their ways. I really wouldn't anticipate the government shutdown. It's only a part of it, a quarter of the government shutdown. Most of it's funded anyway, to go on for months or years. And I think that's silly talk. Anyway, Patrick Buchanan. I'm a fan of Patrick Buchanan. He had a nice little article out today, and I think I'll put it in the weekly newsletter. So make sure you go to the website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com, sign up for it. And he touches on about how history is going to validate Donald Trump's stand on the border wall to defend the sovereignty and the security of the United States. He says, why? Because mass migration from the global south, not climate change, is the real existential crisis of the West, and the American people know this, and even the elites sense it. And he says, just look at the leading liberal newspapers yesterday. They had front page stories about the president's battle with Pelosi and Schumer, and the Post had more stories, including one describing walls in history from China's Great Wall to the Berlin Wall to Israeli West Bank. And he just goes on, and he describes all these liberal magazines, newspapers, of what their pages included yesterday. He says half the columns on the op-ed pages of the papers dealt with Trump, immigration, and the wall. And there was nothing significant in either on the Democrats' hot new issue, a Green New Deal. Nobody really cares about the Green New Deal, is what he's saying. And he says, looking ahead, does anyone think Americans in 2030 are going to be more concerned about the border between North Korea and South Korea, or Turkey or Syria, Kuwait and Iraq? No, what I think they're going to be more concerned about is how we're going to lose our position, number one, as the largest economy in the world. There was a British financial service firm, Standard Chartered. They forecast 10 largest economies by 2030. He says the top 10 is going to be rounded out by emerging markets, including Turkey, Brazil, Russia, and Egypt. America is going to fall to number 3 on the list of the world's largest economies behind China and India. China is going to overtake the United States as the world's largest economy in a decade's time, while India is going to assume second place. It predicts that America will fall to third on the list behind the two Asian giants by 2030, and this was according to Fox Business News. So while Americans is expecting to trail behind China and India, Indonesia is going to vault into the fourth slot. Our long-term growth forecasts are underpinned by one key principle. Countries' share of world GDP should eventually converge with their share of the world's population, driven by convergence of per capita GDP between advanced and emerging economies. And, of course, the size of a country's economy is determined by the GDP, the gross domestic product, which measures the market value of all the final goods and services that are produced in a period of time. So Brazil is the only Latin American country in the top 100, is predicted to be sixth largest by 2030 of $8.6 trillion. You have Egypt as the only Middle Eastern country on the list with a GDP of $8.2 trillion. Russia is slated to be the eighth largest economy with a GDP of 7.9. The point, ladies and gentlemen, our economy is predicted to fall. If you look at what's going on today, you can't argue with that report from this firm on which they have done it in the past, and with populations and economies. You need to prepare no matter where you are, and let us help you do that. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Sign up for the weekly newsletter. You'll see the rest of the story or article. It's a memo to Trump by Patrick Buchanan. Well, we're out of this first segment, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned. When we return, you'll be listening to myself and James Corbett. We will find you acting on your best behavior. Turn your back on Mother Nature. Everybody wants to rule the world.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom, and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSCTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. And I'm Melody Cederstrom. And after we both enjoyed a nice holiday hiatus, I'm pleased to welcome back James Corbett to the program. And of course, everyone knows James is, well, if you don't know, James is the founder and the editor of the Corbett Report, started in 2007. And of course, after the passing of Bob Chapman, he became the editorial writer in 2012 for the International Forecaster. And always, ladies and gentlemen, please visit James' website at thecorbettreport.com. thecorbettreport.com. And you can also request a complimentary copy of the International Forecaster by going to their website, theinternationalforecaster.com. And hello, James.
Well, hello, Melody. Happy New Year. I hope all the listeners out there had a good couple of weeks of eggnog and partying and are ready for 2019. Ready or not, here it comes.
Well, you're absolutely correct. Happy New Year to you also. And Well, we're going to talk about the United States and the government and what's going on here in a little bit, but there is one question, and I'm not able, or I don't really follow this, and perhaps you do a little bit more so, and this is, of course, the Brexit. I believe there's another vote that is scheduled for January 15th. And, of course, there's a lot of fears that Britain could leave the European Union on the 29th of March without a deal. So, will there be a deal or no deal? Your take on this? I mean, is this a nothing burger type thing for the rest of the world?
Yeah, no, I think it's a something burger. It's a something burger. But what does that burger look like? That's a very good question. And we see the types of PR stunts and publicity gimmicks that the British version of the deep state are pulling right now to try to scare parliamentarians, essentially, but the public in general, I'm sure, into going along with, well, we need something. Well, we can't go ahead with this Brexit. So I'm not sure you saw, but they staged a traffic jam from the port of Dover all the way however many miles inland, because that's what it'll look like if we leave without a deal, and all the traffic will be backed up because of customs and all of this. I mean, just silliness that they're trying to pull right now to basically scare the British public, but which, of course, we've been seeing going on since the day the Brexit referendum happened. We've seen people basically being herded into the camp of thinking, oh, we didn't know what we were voting on, or we voted the wrong way, or, oh, let's rethink this. And I think they're still trying to pull those tricks. It's getting closer and closer, and there's still no deal in place, which is interesting. There's a genuine schism happening here that will probably at some point bring down the current government, but in what way and what will be left in its wake? I really wish I had that crystal ball to be able to tell you this, but I don't. And I think it has, at this point, it has a lot to do with the political will and resolve of the people in Britain, because the entire establishment is lined up on the side of, we need to either take the teeth out of this deal so it doesn't mean anything, or to scuttle it entirely, or have some sort of re-referendum. That's the establishment side of this, and that's the way it will fall, unless there is still significant political momentum behind the idea of Britain actually leaving the EU. And the longer that this game goes on, I think the more this favors the establishment. What I think the Brexiteers would want most is something, some sort of deal to get done and inked and in black and white, and so that it is a done deal, so that it's at least a little harder to undo. But we're still not at that point. So I think the next couple of weeks are going to be crucial in terms of which way Brexit actually falls.
And what happens? What is the implications for, you know, the rest of the world? I mean, how does that affect, or is it just contained within, England and, and Europe?
Well, I think obviously it affects the British people first and foremost, second and second most, the world third and third most. But in terms of the world perspective on this, if you're in the United States right now looking at this story, I think one of the important things about this is that this has been since before day one, really, has been one of the locus central focus points of the whole narrative about populism and the populist wave and rising up against the politicians and technocrats that want to rule over the people. This has been seen as something of a kind of a people's movement against this bureaucracy that controls people more and more, and the push towards regional government, which, as we know, is just one part of the push towards global government. So I think that's kind of the way that a lot of outsiders can be looking at this, is where does the populist movement go from here? Can it actually score a single victory, a real victory against the establishment, and do something that the establishment truly does not want to have happen, like the Britain leaving the EU? Now, in terms of the economics of this and what's going on, it will be interesting to see if this does happen and Britain actually does leave the EU, in terms of their establishing of their own trade relations with various countries, and whether they are in fact able to cut equivalent deals or perhaps better deals with certain countries in terms of bilateral trade than they were able to cut as a member of the European Union as a whole. And if so, that would be a big giant flag for other members of the European Union who are thinking about exiting. Maybe there's an advantage to exiting. Maybe it is a good thing that we control our own trade policy. So this might be the dangerous precedent that the establishment doesn't want to have set. So I think those are a couple of things that we can look at if this goes ahead. But let's not count that chicken before it hatches.
Well, you mentioned about the people's movement, the victory that they could claim. But what about here in the States? Has the American citizens claimed somewhat of a similar victory with President Trump?
I think that's, since day one, this has been seen in tandem. The Brexit and the Trump phenomenon have been seen as something related in some nebulous way. And obviously, it's not, you can't draw a straight line, but I think there is some sort of camaraderie there, and that's been seen by people like Nigel Farage, who was obviously important in the Brexit campaign, being on Team Trump and things like that. So we've seen those kinds of linkages, and I think that's the one of the points that's coming here. Obviously, the people who voted for Trump think that they did stick a finger in the establishment's eye with that vote, and so again, the question is, well, what does that actually mean, and what do you actually get out of that? Do you actually get to withdraw from Syria? Do you actually get the border wall that you wanted? Do you actually get these things, or are those just political campaign promises that ultimately the deep state will not allow to happen? And that, again, remains to be seen.
So, we mentioned the wall, and of course, there was President Trump walked out of a meeting today with Pelosi, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, and Schumer, I believe he was there also. Because they told him they would not vote for funding for the border. So he walked out, and he could still declare a national emergency to fund this wall. Are those views, I mean, how is that viewed from your, where you are? Or doesn't anybody really matter? This is a local issue. Or does it matter around the world, other than what you just sort of explained, with the Europe, the Brexit, and so forth?
Yeah, the populism. Well, there is that angle to it, yeah. And clearly that is one part of what's going on here. I think, there are also, of course, regional issues going on. What does this mean with American relations with places like Mexico? Because remember, they were going to pay for the wall, right? But now we're having a government shutdown so that the American government can pay for the wall. And things along those lines. It is, I think it's a bit perplexing for a lot of countries that this kind of argument is even going on, because, I mean, the idea of building a wall to keep people out is not something that it's the average person in Israel is questioning when it comes to the partition of Palestine and Israel. People don't even think of that as an issue. Sitting here in Japan, that has, I think, a pretty notoriously tight border, not only because it's an island nation, but also because, I mean, you just try to come here without the appropriate visa or whatever, you're going to get kicked out. You're going to be expelled from the country. There wouldn't even be a question about it. So there is something kind of unique in this American situation that I don't think myself or other foreigners really can grasp in the same way that someone in the United States can. But it does, one of the things that I think people are looking for is, again, what does this tell us about America and its changing role in the world and its changing relations with the world, and the old verities that people took for granted, and what does that mean? So in the Asia Pacific region, that would be in terms of military compacts and economic compacts. What can this type of event tell us about which way the administration is heading in terms of willing to break old verities and old things that people have held true about the nation? But it's several levels removed from that. So I don't think there's any strong opinions on this, other than sort of the outside perspective of just being a little bit perplexed that this is going on at all, and that the entire U.S. government is being furloughed and shut down on account of this. Not the entire government, of course.
No.
Important operations are continuing. I was just listening to Morning Monarchy, the podcast of my friend James M. Pilato over at MediaMonarchy.com, and he was noting that the FCC is going ahead with its auction of 5G wireless spectrum to the highest bidders. I mean, obviously, vital government functions like that are continuing, but, you know, the average low-level government bureaucrat worker is not going to get paid during that.
Well, that was my next question to you, is this 5G. I was reading an article about where there are going to be 20,000 satellites that will be launched. And, of course, this was from a health-type website, and that was the major concerns. But the FCC, we know, gave approval to SpaceX almost a year ago to launch a little over 4,400 satellites. The total number of satellites that is expected to be put into low and high orbit by several companies is going to be 20,000. They're going to be sending tightly focused beams of microwave radiation. No one will be free from exposure. The cell phones are become more powerful. I don't know what... I mean, it sounds... Is this good or is it not?
Yeah, I was reading the same article recently as well. And no, I don't think that this is good. And regardless of what people think about the health effects of 5G, and I am certainly wary of what this tightly focused microwave radiation is going to do, with radiation that is orders of magnitude stronger than what we are currently receiving from our 4G radiation devices that we carry around in our pockets stupidly, despite the manufacturers warn us not to do. But this is particularly worrying because, as you say, no one's really going to be able to escape this. And of course not, because in the current 4G paradigm, the cell towers, we all know, we could see, we know where they are, and they're spaced out to a certain extent. But with 5G, you have to be within several hundred meters of a transmitter or relay in order for it to work, because this is microwave radiation. It does not have the broadcast range of the 4G networks. So in order to combat that in rural areas where they're not going to have these towers or relay stations every few hundred meters as they will in the major populous cities, they're going to have something like satellites up, broadcasting these beams. That is worrying because no one can really ultimately escape this. This is something that's really started to occur to me, is that, yes, I personally can choose not to have a 5G radiation device in my pocket. I can personally choose not to use this technology, but if I'm going to be in a city around people, it's going to be everywhere around me. Even if I'm going to be in the countryside, they're going to be broadcasting it through these satellites. So it's exceptionally worrying, and I think people should be worried and more at least aware of this as an issue. This is coming into place within the next year or two. This is happening as we speak. It's already being tested in certain areas. So welcome to 2019, and it's going to be one hell of a ride. I just wonder if the public is even going to be aware of it until it's already a fait accompli.
I get people embrace, at least here in the States, they just embrace technology. So if it's something that'll make their phones stronger, better, and they can get a little more pixels and better pictures, they'll embrace it. They don't seem to have any concerns about their health and or any of the other.
I wonder to the extent to which that's true. Because I still, I guess I'm getting further and further detached from the mainstream, but I still cannot believe that people have Alexas and Echoes and what have you in their homes, these spying devices listening at all
times.
They love it. This other technology. But there are people who really do love it and really do buy it. So I guess I'm getting further and further away from the mainstream. But unfortunately for people like myself and others in the audience who themselves don't want to participate in this technology, as I say, we're starting to be enmeshed in this technological grid from which no one can really escape.
And you know what also is interesting is that these satellites are very small, about the size of a small refrigerator. They only weigh about 880 pounds, and their life expectancy is only about 5 years. So now you're going to have a lot of the space junk orbiting the Earth. Eventually they're going to fall. And so now you have all this hazardous materials, and it's
it seems like a stupid way to do it, but it certainly will be an important part of this Internet of Things that they've been hyping for years now, and is becoming a reality, because pretty soon everything will have its own embedded microchip, and they will all be tracked and traced, and will be feeding data back and forth through this 5G network all the time. And wow. Well, buckle in, because we're heading into the future.
Yes, we are. As we often say, the Jetsons are here. You know, here, the Hong Kong proposes criminalizing disrespect for the China flag. I don't know if you heard about that, where Hong Kong officials reportedly will propose a law that would make disrespecting their national anthem a crime, raising concern within the opposition ranks. Is this just something that's much, is it a big deal or a much ado about nothing? Just interesting.
I haven't been following this story, but my understanding is that the Executive Council has decided to table this bill, amongst other things. But it's unlikely that it will actually be approved before the summer recess this year. So I don't think it's an impending thing, but the fact that they're even tabling this, I think, is pretty amazing. Especially for Hong Kong, which I think prides itself on being apart from China and from having that autonomy, as it's called. And there's a huge people's movement against the encroaching Chinese government into Hong Kong affairs. So the idea of this kind of draconian legislation, really, to make people stand for the anthem and salute the flag and all of this, is, I don't know, it's very interesting. I wonder where this is going.
Well, where we're going is into a break. And ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back right after these few short messages. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Oh, won't you tell me again?
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with James Corbett. And we're heading into the last segment of the program today. And recently, you interviewed Jason Burmis of Pulse That's Change right. to talk about the recently released 9/11 papers and any new information in this release, and does it tell us anything more about 9/11? And can the documents
well,
be verified?
Yeah, well, it's an interesting story. So for those who don't know, there was this hacker group called the Dark Overlord, which I hadn't heard of, but apparently they were involved in a hack a TV production studio recently, where they threatened to release the next season of Orange is the New Black, which they had managed to hack somehow, unless they were paid a ransom in Bitcoin. And from what I understand, they were paid that ransom, but one of the stipulations of their agreement was don't involve law enforcement, and the studio involved law enforcement, so they released it anyway. Apparently, this is what they're known for. But anyway, apparently they've hacked a number of businesses, and they're doing this Bitcoin ransom thing where either they're ransoming the corporations that they've hacked, give us this Bitcoin and we'll give you back your files, or they're going to the public and saying, you give us the money and we'll give it to you. So they say they're not motivated by politics, they don't care about truth or anything of that sort, but they have these files, and whoever pays them the most will get them, basically. So that's the story, at least as it's being presented, and there are files that relate to a bunch of different law legal cases that have been tried related to 9/11, the insurance claims and things like that, that have bearing on 9/11. And apparently, as part of the filings for these cases, there's transcripts of interviews with various people. There's also documents, including sensitive law enforcement documents and others, that apparently have not been made public yet, at least so the hackers are claiming. And so as part of this deal, they have this massive release, and they've basically tranched it out into 8 layers, and there's different payment milestones. If you pay a certain amount of Bitcoin, you'll get to this layer, and if you pay a certain amount, you'll get that layer. And so they've released some of the documents, apparently only a small fraction, but still some of the documents that they have. And long story short, there is nothing so far that is bombshell, no signed order for 9/11 by Dick Cheney or something like that. But there are some from what we can tell, these are real documents that they've shared so far. There's a number of things that line up. Not only do they really pertain to real cases that we know really exist, but also the metadata in the files would be extremely difficult to forge. It would be theoretically possible, but almost for most intents and purposes impossible to forge, in terms of the log access files, as matching time and date stamps matching up with the files themselves and things like this. It's almost certain these documents are real. And there are some interesting tidbits that have come out, and that's what I was talking to Jason Burmis about. People who don't know, he was one of the people behind the Loose Change documentary. He also did his own 9/11 documentary called Fabled Enemies, and he is working with We Are Change on a secondary kind of YouTube channel called Pulse Change. And he's been going through these documents one by one And he's one of the most knowledgeable 9/11 researchers I know. He has an encyclopedic knowledge of 9/11 and the various players front to back. So if there's anyone who's going to find a bombshell, it would be someone like Jason Burmis. So he has found some interesting bits in these documents so far, including intimations that Flight 93 was indeed shot down. There's mention in one of these documents about military involvement, like with Flight 93, which of course has long been speculated that Flight 93 was indeed shot down, not brought down in the heroic let's roll narrative that we've been fed, which there are many different ways that we can look at that, but one of them of course is the crater, the smoldering crater that involved no fuselage, no engines, no wings, just tiny scraps of shrapnel, including a shrapnel field that spread out over 8.5 miles, which one would not expect from a straight down collision, those types of things. Other little tidbits like that are in these documents, but again, so far no bombshells, and it's not sure exactly what the state of this release is, because this Dark Overlord group is being taken down from every site that it tries to post to, and so it's only up on the dark web. You have to go on Tor to even access it, and so it's extremely difficult to even find these files at this point, and unlikely that this is going to get much mainstream, widespread attraction in the mainstream press because of how obscure this release really is at this point.
Yeah, we had a client that they were putting in the road. They had to put in a road to where Flight 93 went down for Bush and them to, you know, do their photo pictures and so forth. And he was telling us that when they were doing the road going in there, that's what he said. He says there was just there was body parts and things from trees and, you know, just the debris was just... There was absolutely no way.
Spread out widely.
There's just no way.
Which, of course, makes no sense if this was, as we're told, straight nose down into the ground and that's it.
Exactly. Yeah. How about missing $21 trillion from the Pentagon and HUD?
Do you think that's newsworthy?
I
guess so.
Well, I'm really glad you did this interview with Dr. Mark Skidmore of the Michigan State University and with Catherine Austin Fitz, because this has been floating around for a while, and I really, I look to you when you do these interviews to really get the truth. So I'm really glad you did this interview. And can you tell the listeners about Dr. Skidmore and Catherine Austin Fitz's findings?
Yes, absolutely. So for people who don't know, this is pertaining to the issue that has been an issue that was first, as far as I know, first identified, I believe, in the 1998 or 1999 Pentagon review by the Inspector General, the review of the Pentagon's books, that found trillions of dollars of unaccounted transactions, i.e. they didn't have the paperwork to process what these transactions were. They didn't know what it meant. It was just trillions of dollars that they couldn't account for. And that number originally started off, I believe, something like 1.6 trillion, then it was 2.1 trillion. By the time of 9/11, as people might know, the day before 9/11, Rumsfeld had a little press conference to announce a war on the bureaucracy, basically a war on the Pentagon, because our systems can't account for $2.1 trillion in transactions. That number grew over the years. The last number that I heard was 8.5 trillion a few years ago, but now 21 trillion is the ultimate number. And this number is the ultimate number, question mark. And this number is arrived at by Catherine Austin Fitz and Dr. Mark Skidmore, who have been teaming up at a site called missingmoney.solari.com. And they have basically put together all of these different Inspector General reports over the years. You know, here's $6.5 trillion we can't account for. Here's $3.7 trillion, blah, blah, blah. They add it all up. $21 trillion is the amount that at least we know and can point to the various Inspector General reports where they announce this money is, well, this money, question mark, is missing. There's so little information given that we don't actually have any clue what this ultimately means. It is Catherine Austin Fitz's contention, and Dr. Mark Skidmore certainly says that it's possible that this is real, actual money that is flowing through the Pentagon and it is just disappearing into a black hole. And it could be much, much more than $21 trillion. There are other people, including the a recent report in The Nation that tried to do a report on this, basically came up with the idea, well, this is just plugs. You see, at the end of the year, their numbers don't add up because their systems kind of double count things, and they don't talk to each other, so they have to just put these plugs in to make everything add up. And so it's not real money. It's not like it's missing. There's 21 trillion missing. But the real truth of this matter is we don't know, because there just is not enough information in these reports from the Inspector General. Plus, they don't even issue them every single year. It's just we get little bits and pieces handed down to us here and there. But it truly makes no sense. As Dr. Skidmore talks about in that conversation that I had with him, there are things like, you know, $800 billion line item of, oh, we couldn't balance what we received from the Treasury, so we had to add $800 billion to that. That makes no sense. I mean, how can you possibly not be able to balance an income from the Treasury with what you actually received from the Treasury? That seems like the most simple accounting transaction that exists. So what does it mean when you plug in $800 billion into the books like that? It's just, there's no way that we can possibly have any handle on what this means, because the books are so opaque. And on top of that, perhaps even the bigger bombshell is that last October there was a federal guideline that was passed that now literally allows the government to cook the books in any way they want. The guideline says the black budget, as it's called, for undercover operations and things like this, sensitive security issues, that's always been undercover, kind of. Only privileged people in the Congress can know, you know, what the money's going to and what it's being used for. But at least we knew there was money going into that black hole. Well, now they've actually changed the federal guidelines, so every federal agency can now take money that is part of any sort of national security operation, anything sensitive, and who knows who gets to define that and how they define it, but anything that has to do with national security, they can now literally cook the books. They can present false books to the public and say that money is going somewhere else that it isn't, or going to some program that it isn't going to, in the interest of protecting the secrecy of the government. I mean, that's insanity. They are now literally out and out saying that the books can legally and openly be cooked, and there's no legal recourse to that. So
that is incredible.
It's absolutely jaw-dropping. And not a single outlet whatsoever is covering this, which kind of tells you the story, you know, the real story here.
And it also confirms, I believe, they do these changes and they do this just because they know how close it is to the point of where the system is going to, you know, the amount of debt and so forth, it just can't be handled anymore. And so I do believe there's a lot of distractions, or debt, or spending. I mean, none of that is discussed.
It doesn't make sense from so many different perspectives, including the perspective of, maybe this is real money that they're putting into some, you know, special project, black project or something, or they're just stealing or whatever it is. But even so, why would they have it in a way that the Inspector General can come along and say, well, hey, here's $6 trillion that we couldn't account for? Why would they have these numbers in their books anyway? I mean, it makes no sense, unless, of course, it's all just to confuse the public so that we truly have zero idea about the budget of the Pentagon.
That's probably the real reason. I mean, there was discussions that during the crisis that $16 trillion was given to Europe. I don't know if that was ever, you know, proven or if that was accurate, but it was certainly reported by Forbes and I think other places. So, you know, but yeah, I guess it's all off books. So I could really see how easily $21 trillion could, and these numbers are just so staggering. Yeah. That's what's always so
They're unimaginable. As I was saying in that interview with Dr. Skidmore, when I was thinking about this story recently and thinking about the $2.1 trillion as it was being reported in 2001, in my own head, I rounded that off to $2 trillion. Mm-hmm. But I had to stop myself and think, no, I just rounded off $100 billion, which is theoretically one-sixth of the entire budget of the Pentagon, right? These are just astronomical numbers that, again, one could even, if this was, you know, $210 billion or something. I mean, that would be an incredible story. But to multiply that by two orders of magnitude, it's just, you can't get your head around it.
And so, you know, it's the day of reckoning is, to me, I believe, is not that far away. Well, we're going to be running out of time soon, and I want to talk about your first 2019 newsletter article on thecorbettreport.com. You features outrageous New Year predictions.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but I get kind of sick of the same old New Year's predictions. So I decided to take it a little step further and make outrageous predictions that probably won't come true, but hey, it might get you thinking.
So how about if we mention a few of them and you can give the listeners the details? Sure. So number one, a grand jury will unravel the 9/11 plot and deliver justice for that crime.
Yes. As my listeners might know, there is a grand jury investigation that is being opened by the United States Federal Special Prosecutor. Supposedly, that's the last word that we had on the subject from a letter, but this is all apparently taking place behind the scenes. Anyway, I think it's exceptionally unlikely that we're going to get new information about the 9/11 attacks through some sort of grand jury process, but hey, you never know, and maybe by the end of the year we'll see certain former presidents and others in orange jumpsuits doing a perp walk.
Okay. How about the Korean War will end? Because they wanted to.
Yeah, this stems from the New Year's message that Kim Jong-un put out, which a lot of outlets went with the headline, you know, your turn, Trump, basically. Basically saying, hey, North Korea is doing all this stuff to comply with the U.S. and its wishes, but the U.S. is not only relieving sanctions, actually talking about ramping it up. Well, people are, including Kim Jong-un, are starting to realize that the real bread is being buttered here by the South Koreans. The real meat of this relationship is the relationship between South and North Korea, and they might just decide to conclude a peace between themselves. You know, who cares what the U.S. and others have to think about it? And that is increasingly at least becoming a possibility that, hey, if it happened this year, wouldn't that be something?
Yes, it would. And we have a lot more that we will just have to cover on the next program when you're with us. So I want to thank you for joining me today. And ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back. Until then, be safe. Good night and God bless.
And he left for me. That's too bad.